Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 93. I'm recording it on Friday, February 13th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 14. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for this podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com website, and the title of this selection is Improbable. The title of the podcast is Rational Man Loses It. There's a columnist at the New York Times, David Brooks, and he's exciting me. I haven't followed his work too much in the past, but he's written two columns about the economic crisis that I think hit things right on the head. And the latest one he published on was published on February 12th, 2009. It's entitled The Worst Case Scenario in the New York Times by David Brooks. And I'm reading it online, so I believe you'll be able to find that if you do an online search. And the earlier column that David Brooks wrote, there are two columnists. There's a lot of good stuff coming out. I've been following a lot of the material written about the economic crisis. There's been a lot of good stuff, but there have been two people who have especially impressed me. One is Michael Lewis. He's the author of Liar's Poker, and he's writing a book on the economic crisis, and I'm looking forward to that because what I've read from the columns he's written suggests that he's going to dig deeper than a lot of people have been digging in the work they've been doing in this area. And David Brooks, his earlier column hit it exactly on the head. David Brooks, I think, is on to the story, and my sense is he's not going to give it up. My sense is he knows he's on to something. This is just my journalism instincts, but that's the sense I pick up. The earlier column by David Brooks, I recorded two podcasts. I don't recall the numbers of them, but the column was entitled The Behavioral Revolution, and I believe that was the title of the first podcast. And then I did a second podcast on the reader comments to that article. So if you find this podcast interesting, you may want to go back and listen to those two. Look for the podcast entitled The Behavioral Revolution. And that article by David Brooks, it was, I don't know, a month or two ago, pretty much laid out the case that what's happened here, let me just tell you briefly what's happened here, but what's happened is people are jumping to all sorts of false conclusions about what the nature of the problem is. And the true nature of the problem has to do with our understanding of how stock markets work. And David Brooks is actually taking it a step farther than I usually do, properly so. But I focus on the investing side. But if you take it a step further, what we're really looking at is our understanding of economics works has failed us. So the way I got into this was in the work I did on safe withdrawal rates. I put up a post at Motley Fool back in May of 2002 pointing out that the studies we use to plan our retirements, the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, get all the numbers wrong. And I thought that was worth pointing out to people. And when I pointed it out, lots of people were very excited to learn that, but there was a small group of people who were bitterly, bitterly opposed to the idea of discussing the errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. And of course I pondered that, what happened, what made these people so angry? And what it is that these people understood that when I criticized the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, I was doing more than criticizing the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. I was really implicitly, I didn't realize this at the time, but I came to realize it over time, I was implicitly criticizing the passive investing model for understanding how stock investing works. And so now I focus on that instead of just, finding fault with the retirement studies. I tend to find fault with passive investing. That's really the cause of our economic crisis. The idea that You can invest in stocks and not pay attention to price, that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. The idea makes no sense. The idea has caused more human misery than any mistake ever made in the history of personal finance, although I don't believe it was intentional. I believe it followed from a more basic idea. Passive investing's been around, I don't know, it became popular in the late 70s when Bogle founded the Vanguard Group. But the efficient market theory is the intellectual framework for passive investing, and that's been around a little longer. That dates back to the 1960s, and Eugene Fama, and it's really an idea that has been around at earlier times. It gets resurrected. Whenever people are looking for a rationalization for engaging in a purely emotional, completely reckless approach to stock investing, they turn to some version or other of the efficient market theory. So it went under other names at earlier times. But it always leads to stock crashes. It always leads to massive, massive pain for anyone who buys into the theory, which I don't even think it's right to call it a theory. It's a I don't know what you would call it exactly. It's an impulse. It's an emotional impulse. It's not really a theory. Suggests there's some sort of thought behind it. There's lots of thought in the dressing that surrounds the efficient market theory. There's very, very smart people came up with this, and very smart people explore it, and very smart people believe in it. But the core idea, the idea that investing is a 100% rational endeavor, which is the core idea, is just nonsense. There's simply no support for this anywhere in the historical record. None whatsoever. And so it's a very, very dangerous idea, but very appealing at times of high stock prices, because we all have an emotional desire for a get-rich-quick scheme, and investing in stocks at times of high prices is a get-rich-quick approach to investing. And this theory, this quote-unquote theory, is a good rationalization for doing what our worst emotional instincts advise us to do. But if you go back, you know, you can go even deeper than that. You can say, okay, it's not safe withdrawal rates that really the problem, it's passive investing. And then you can say, well, it's not really passive investing that's the problem, it's the efficient market theory. Well, you can go another step. You could say it's not really the efficient market theory, it's something bigger than that. It's the idea of rational man or economic man. And this is an idea in economic literature which has deep roots. And that's why I call this podcast Rational Man Loses It. What's really happened is this rational man idea of understanding how economics works has always been deeply flawed. And the people who put it forward know that. A lot of them do. But I think that people have felt that there was not a good alternative. There is a good alternative today, behavioral finance, but that's only in recent decades been catching on, and so people have stuck with this rational man approach or economic man approach far longer than they should have. And it eventually became incorporated through the work of Eugene Fama and then Burton Malkiel and ultimately John Bogle. It became incorporated into the investing advice you hear. So when people tell you, oh, there's no need to change your stock allocation, even, well, prices are, you know, crazy, but that's, don't worry about that. That's all the rational man approach to economics that's causing that. All the conventional advice you've heard for the last 30 years, buy and hold, stay the course, timing doesn't work, stocks for the long run, all that sort of thing, all of that is the ultimate product of the rational man school of economics, which is flawed to its core. And what's happened is, instead of this just being a bunch of academics discussing this in a classroom, where maybe not that much harm can be done, we now, in the Bogle era, we have applied rational man thinking to how the middle class invests for its retirement. In other words, we've taken this ivory tower egghead idea that never really made sense, but you know, lots of people wrote papers about it and all this sort of thing, and we gave it practical application. We said, hey, what if all middle class investors invested their retirement money under this idea? Wouldn't that be something? And yes, it would be something. What it would be is the greatest loss of middle class wealth in the history of the United States. the greatest economic crisis the United States has faced since the Great Depression. That's what we're dealing with today. And not many people, some are sort of catching on. Some knew this all along. Robert Shiller wrote about it in Irrational Exuberance. Michael Alexander wrote about it in Stock Cycles. I've been writing about it. John Walter Russell's been writing about it at his website, early-retirement-planning-insights.com. Lots of others. Rob Arnott, Cliff S. Ness, Andrew Smithers, Ed Easterling, John Malden. I always forget that guy. I did a podcast recently, and I better look up his name because, unfortunately, I forget his name, and he deserves to be mentioned as John Hussman. John Hussman has a website. If you enter him into Google, you will find the John Hussman website. He's been giving realistic investing advice for quite some time now. And looking for the name of the fellow. I did a podcast on him. And he's made some excellent statements, and I just hope I can find his name here. It's not fair if I don't. Jeremy Grantham. I'm sorry, Jeremy. Jeremy Grantham tells the truth, straight no chaser about stock investing. That was podcast 83, I believe. Jeremy Grantham's been talking about this, and Jeremy Grantham had a quarterly letter to his shareholders recently where he went into detail about how the big problem, the reason we're suffering this economic crisis is that these academics don't want to admit they got it wrong. They don't want to admit the efficient market theory is nonsense. But that is the root problem. And the efficient market theory really has its, you know, the roots of this are deeper even than the efficient market theory. The roots really are in this rational man approach to understanding economics. And the problem with the rational man approach, just very simply, is they assume that everyone maximizes their, I don't know how to say it, their personal benefit. They everyone acts in their own self-interest. That's the theory. You can really trace this back to the invisible hand theory of that Adam Smith used to justify capitalism. And of course, there's truth in it. It's not entirely lacking in truth. That's what makes it so dangerous. There's enough truth in this idea to make it plausible and appealing, but there's enough lack of truth in it to make it very dangerous. So the way I don't know precisely what the percentages are, but what I usually say is that investing is roughly 30% rational and 70% emotional. So the efficient market theory presumes it's 100% rational. Therefore, when they calculate the numbers for you to plan your retirement, they get them wildly wrong. They use a methodology that causes the numbers to be all wildly off the mark. So, for example, back in 2000, taking a 4% safe withdrawal rate your retirement had about a 30% chance of surviving, and they were telling people it's 100% safe. So millions of people will be suffering failed retirements as a result of these demonstrably false claims. But they were not corrected, because to correct them would have meant admitting that the passive investing model has failed. And of course, there's an entire industry today built around passive investing. So that's a big step. But this economic crisis may lead us to acknowledging that passive investing has failed. And if that happens, that would be very good news, because we have 30 years of academic research into rational investing that we could then start talking about. All middle-class investors could start benefiting from understanding how stock investing works in the real world. Now, first, I'm going to read parts of the David Brooks column, and then I want to respond to, or comment on reader comments to it. But first, I just want to read a post by a fellow named P.K. Crafter. And P.K. Crafter is a poster at the Vanguard Diehards board. He's a longtime Bogleheads apologist, big-time apologist for passive investing. And Paul is his first name, P.K. Crafter. He gives he's talking about efficient market theory in this post, and everything he says is right. And it's wonderful when you hear somebody from, quote, the other side, as if there are other sides, as if some of us are trying to learn how to invest effectively and some of us are not, the silliness. But he's on the other side in the sense that He'll often engage in attacks on people who point out the flaws of passive investing. But in this post, he tells it 100% straight, no chaser. He tells it the way it is. And I applaud PK Crafter for this post. So I'm going to read what he says. And he put this post up today. And he says, there is a problem with the definition of efficient market hypothesis, because Fama is the creator of this approach. Fama himself has unsuccessfully tried to explain it clearly several times. Well, that would indicate a problem, wouldn't it? If the guy who came up with it is not capable of explaining how it works. He is still uncomfortable with it, talking about Fama. Several others have also added their versions, but if it can't be explained clearly in 100 words, it isn't right. That's true. When a theory's been out for 30 years and no one can explain what it says, that's a bad sign. I very much agree. Back to PK Crafter. My own attempt, if I were so presumptuous, would be to include something about the distortion that wild speculation can cause, or simply throw out the connection to fair value. The market still moves quickly on information, but the information is not based on rational thinking, so prices don't correspond to anything close to fair value. It's the fair value connection that messes it up when speculation runs rampant. That's exactly right. Fama was correct that the market processes millions of information bits in almost instantaneously. That part's right and important. It's important information. I won't go into why, but Fama, put forward valid insights. But what he got wrong was he assumed, please notice the verb, assumed, not, he didn't demonstrate this. He assumed this because of this rational man idea. He assumed that all of the inputs to the market were based on rational thought. And therefore, if the market was capable of processing millions of information bits, what you would get at the end was an efficient price. The market would set the price properly. In reality, what the market is doing is it's processing millions of information bits, but 70% of them are just pure emotion. They have nothing to do with reality. They're just investor emotion. And so what the market is telling us is not a correct price or the efficient price or the rational price. It's telling us prices that are wildly, wildly off the mark. And that's why it's so dangerous to be a passive investor. If you fall for this idea that the market might be efficient, and you fall for the idea that passive investing might work, you're going to get crushed every time. Because it might work for a short amount of time. There are time periods when the market's not overvalued. And during those times, passive investing will take you to the same place as rational investing. From 1975 through 1995, passive investing was rational. There was no need to change your stock allocation. Stocks were priced reasonably. But then in 95, prices went to insanely dangerous levels and stayed there. And so from 95 through the first part of 2008, to engage in passive investing meant to engage in insanely dangerous risk-taking. It was to bet all your life savings on a wild gamble, a gamble that could pay off for a few years, and it did pay off from 95 through 2000, but could not possibly pay off long-term. It had to crash. You had to lose most of your retirement money. And of course, when the majority of middle-class investors lose most of their retirement money, what we have is an economy in crisis. So that's where we are today, and we're trying to regain trust of middle-class investors. Explain to them why have we lost all our retirement money, and we're eventually, I think, going to have to explain to them that passive investing can never work in the real world. That it was a mistake, a terrible, terrible mistake. So here's what I wrote. I posted this at the Goon Central board, Paul's comments, PK Crafter's comments. And here's, I just wrote a few paragraphs. That's the entire deal in a small number of words. The information processed by the market is, quote, not based on rational thinking, unquote. Therefore, the market price is often wildly wrong. The PE10 number tells you how wrong. That's why I use PE10 at the PassionSaving.com website. The magic of PE10 is it takes that market price, whatever the S&P is or whatever the Dow number is, and it adjusts it. So, for example, in January of 2000, when the market price was 3 times fair value, you could look at the PE10 number and you could see that it was 3 times fair value, and you could just discount. You could say, well, if my portfolio, my stock portfolio was $100,000, well, that's 3 times fair value. So my real market value is roughly $35,000. And that tells you from that point what you have, tells you how to go about planning your retirement, how much to invest in stocks. If you know that stocks are valued at 3 times, you know there's going to be a big price crash. So you don't want to be going with a, 60% stock allocation when prices are going to be falling by 2/3. You know, you want it maybe 10% stocks or 20% stocks, something like that. So it tells you what to do. This is the benefit of valuation-informed indexing. Instead of investing in a reckless way, you can invest in a reasonable, practical, realistic way. The market is efficient in the long run. This is, again, I'm reading from my post. The market is efficient in the long run. Prices must ultimately reflect fair value or the market would collapse. This is why long-term returns can be predicted by looking at PE10. When you know how far off the numbers are today and you know where they are headed, it's simple math, figuring out where they are going over time. And that's what the calculators at the website do. They tell you where the market is going over time. Instead of pretending that it's okay to be passive, we created these calculators. I created them with John Walter Russell so that you know where the market's headed, and by knowing where the market's headed, you know what you should be doing with your investments if you want to be successful as a long-term investor. If the market were efficient on day one, all that the passive investing model teaches would be so, and it would be. It is not, for just the reasons that P.K. Crafter points to in this post. The market is always processing information bits. In the short term, most of those information bits are the product of emotion, not reason. The only way to know how to get your stock the only way to know how to set your stock allocation rationally is to look to PE10 or some other valid valuation assessment tool. So I believe that the answer to our economic crisis is not an economic stimulus bill, and it's not letting the free market go wild. You know, what President Bush did was just say, hey, stocks are valued at 3 times fair value, not my problem. You know, just let it go wild, free market. That doesn't work. And now President Obama is saying, well, the answer is an economic stimulus. And, that's a sideshow. I doubt very much that's going to work. It doesn't address the problem. The problem is that we need to give people accurate. Free market is not a bad thing, but free market will not work unless people have information on how to handle the free market. In other words, when stocks are valued at 3 times fair value, people need to know that. You can't just say, ignore, the fact that the money you put in stocks is money you're just throwing down the drain, That's not right. We should be telling people the accurate information they need. We should be telling them, every dollar you put into stocks, 67 cents, you're just, pissing away. It's just going to buy cotton candy. It gets blown away in the wind. 33 cents is buying economic, goods of economic value that might, grow. But of course, if 2/3 is being pissed away and 1/3 is real, it's going to take many, many, many years for your investment to pay off. It could be 25, 30 years. Whereas if you invest in stocks at a time when prices are reasonable, as they are today, the odds are strongly in your favor that within 10 years, you will have obtained a reasonable, good return on your stock investment. So it makes all the difference in the world. Investing in stocks at times of insanely dangerous prices is not a good idea, never works. Investing in times of reasonable prices has always worked in the past. So long as our economy does not totally collapse, that approach will work in the long term, not necessarily in the short term. We may well see another big price crash, but over 10 years, you are likely to get a good return today. At least the long term odds are on your side today. Whereas from 1995 through the first part of 2008, the long-term odds were very much against you if you were investing in stocks at those prices. So David Brooks, he's exploring this idea in a second column, and the second column is much harder to understand than the first. The first, he sort of laid out the basics, and if you read this column and read the reader comments, you will see a lot of people are struggling trying to understand what he's saying, but my sense is that he's going to be writing about this again, and he's, you know, you can't say everything in one column. You only have 1,000 words or 1,200 words. So he's just looking at it from one angle, and my guess is that David Brooks will be returning to this theme. So it is an interesting case. It's an interesting column, and he's writing about the Obama stimulus plan, and he's critical of it, but I don't think it's, some are taking this as though he's being partisan, that he's opposing Obama and he's taking a Republican position. I don't think that's right. And there are comments in the column that very strongly indicate he's not trying to be partisan here. He has critical comments about the Republicans as well. And I think rightly so. The problem here is not a partisan problem. The Bush administration did nothing about the passive investing disaster. The Clinton administration did nothing about the passive investing disaster. And, you know, the Obama administration, it's only been in office for 1 month. And so far, Obama's done nothing about passive investing, but we don't know that that's going to remain the case. It would not surprise me at all if later this year there were hearings that led to Obama adopting Robert Shiller's idea of a government subsidy for financial education, where we would try to teach people the ABCs of stock investing, all the basics of stock investing that people need to know, but they cannot learn for so long as most of the quote-unquote experts are pushing this passive investing gibberish on us. So I personally think that may well happen. I think the odds are better than 50-50. I'm going to do a separate column on the Shiller fix, the Shiller reform proposal. And I think Obama may adopt that. I know that Obama has met with Shiller, and he has not taken a position on that proposal. But my guess is there will be hearings later this year, and it would not surprise me if the Obama administration got behind that. So this is not a partisan. Those of us who are arguing for rational investing, to acknowledge that passive investing has failed and to have a national debate on what works, which is rational investing. Rational investing is acknowledging that prices affect long-term returns, that you must, what we've been told for 30 years now is there's no need to time the market. That's what the passive investing advocates have been telling us. You could just stay at that same stock allocation, makes no difference. What rational investing says just the opposite. You must engage in long-term market timing. You must change your stock allocation when prices get to insanely dangerous levels to have any hope of succeeding as a long-term investor. So I'm going to read a little bit from the David Brooks column entitled The Worst Case Scenario, dated February 12, 2009. Between 1990 and 2007, the total mortgage debt held by Americans rose from $2.5 trillion to $10.5 trillion. This rise was part of a societal credit bubble that burst in 2008. To cushion the pain of that collapse, federal authorities decided to replace private debt with public debt. In 2008, this whole column is written, it's written from a future perspective that may throw you as I start to read this. In 2008, the Bush administration increased spending by about $1.7 trillion. And guaranteed loans, investments, and deposits worth about $8 trillion. In 2009, the Obama administration spent $800 billion on a stimulus package, $1 trillion on a second round of bank bailouts, and committed another $1 trillion on health care reform and other bailout plans. See, this is written from the future. It's speculative. Americans generally welcomed the burst of public activism. I'm going to skip down. In normal times, Americans would have been skeptical of proposals to double or triple the size of federal programs. But amid the economic fear, that skepticism fell away. The Obama administration was staffed with moderates who found that there was no reward for moderation. Liberals attacked them for being tepid. Republicans attacked them because it was enjoyable to see Democrats attacked. See, this is not a partisan column. Over time, the administration drifted left and created what you might call split-level technocratic liberalism. President Obama defended spending initiatives in broad terms. He had enormous faith in the power of highly trained experts and based his arguments on models and projections. During 2010, the economic decline abated, but the recovery did not arrive. There were a few false dawns and stagnation. The problem was this. Now, this is where David Brooks gets to the heart of the matter, the behavioral finance revolution. The problem was this. The policymakers knew how to pull economic levers, but they did not know how to use those levers to affect social psychology. The crisis was labeled an economic crisis, but it was really a psychological crisis. I want to read those two sentences again. The policymakers knew how to pull economic levers, but they did not know how to use those levers to affect social psychology. The crisis was labeled an economic crisis, but it was really a psychological crisis. Schiller has said exactly that. He said, we are dealing with a psychological problem. And I believe that's true. It was caused by a mood of fear and uncertainty, which led consumers to not spend, bankers to not lend, and entrepreneurs to not risk. No amount of federal spending could change this psychology because uncertainty about the future remained acute. That's, you know, we've got to address that. And an economic stimulus is really just more of what we've heard, you know, for many, many years now. It's standard approach to fixing this kind of problem. And we need to get deeper. We need to deal with this rational man theory, which has been discredited. Back to David Brooks. Essentially, Americans had migrated from one society to another, from a society of high trust to a society of low trust. From a society of optimism to a society of foreboding. From a society in which certain financial habits applied to a society in which they did not. In the new world, investors had no basis from which to calculate risk. That's such an important sentence. In the new world, investors had no basis from which to calculate risk. Do you see? Our entire system breaks down if investors do not know how to calculate risk. This is the whole ball game. And this is where I came into this story. I came into this story with a post that I put to the Motley Fool board in May of 2002, saying that the studies we all use to plan our retirements are analytically invalid. That means they get the numbers wrong. These studies said that the safe withdrawal rate for a high stock portfolio in January of 2000 was 4%. And when you calculate the number using an analytically valid methodology, the number you get is 2%. So that means that investors invested in stocks had no idea what sort of return they were going to get. Investors who put money in stocks in January of 2000, they thought they were doing a smart thing. Millions of us did. Millions. And the proof of this is on our discussion boards, the post archives of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. Millions of us thought we were doing a prudent, sensible, reasonable thing. If you think that, please go to the website passionsaving.com. Look on the left-hand side for a button marked Stock Return Predictor and plug into that calculator the PE10 level of 44, which is the PE10 level that applied in January of 2000. And you will see that the most likely long-term return on stocks at that time was a negative 1% annualized per year. Negative number. The more money you put in stocks, the less money you'd have for retirement. That's the way it worked. The more money you put in stocks, the less money you'd have for retirement. Because stocks were likely to produce a negative return for 10 years. So if you put $5,000 in stocks, you know, I can't give you the number. You would lose, you know, say $5,500. You'd be down $500 at the end of 10 years. If you put $10,000 in, you'd be down maybe $11,000. You know, you'd be down $1,000. In other words, however much money you put in stocks, you'd be down more. If you put in $100,000, you'd be down even more. When an investment class produces a negative return, you're moving backwards. You're not moving forwards. But the people who are known as quote-unquote experts in this field, people who are paying millions of dollars a year to advise us on how to invest, they were telling us stocks were just fine. They were saying stocks for the long run. Timing doesn't work. Buy and hold, stay the course. Investing in tips, Treasury inflation-protected securities were paying a 4% real return. But I advised investing in tips at the Motley Fool Board, and the passive investing enthusiasts were ridiculing the idea. Oh, Rob is scared. He's a scaredy cat. Oh, it's okay to be a scaredy cat, Rob. We understand. We understand some people are scaredy cats. They don't get to retire, but we understand that you're a scaredy cat. But we're not scaredy cats. We're brave. We're going to invest in an asset class paying a negative return because we listen to the experts. We know they're smart. The experts believed in this rational man idea. This idea that all people are all investors are trying to maximize their returns. And that idea is, of course, plausible. It's a plausible idea. It's not borne out, though, by the historical record. Of course, we would all like to think that we're seeking to maximize our returns. But because we are human, we are all greatly influenced by our emotions. That's the real world. And when stocks are insanely overvalued, we love to put all our money in stocks. When the return goes negative on stocks, we love to invest in stocks. And the only hope we have is that experts would advise us not to do so, that experts would discourage the practice, and that might help us to listen to our common sense and pull back. But the experts were doing just the opposite. When we were driving down the highway at 150 miles per hour, the experts weren't saying, maybe you ought to put the brake on. They were saying, hey, no need for brakes in cars anymore. Eugene Fama figured it out. We don't need brakes. That's for losers. That's for scaredy cats. We don't need brakes. This is the rational man approach. Rational man approach to economics led to efficient market theory in investing. And efficient market theory is a theoretical approach to investing, and the theoretical approach led to the practical approach called passive investing, promoted by John Bogle, founder of Vanguard, and thousands. There are surely thousands of investing experts that promote passive investing. The dominant school today, to this day, even with all the losses it has created, it's still dominant today. We're starting to see some cracks in the wall. So the question we really need to be facing, David Brooks is pointing this out, is the real question we need to be facing is how do we get investor confidence back? And the answer is not trotting out these worn out cliche slogans. Timing doesn't work. Stocks for the long run. Buy and hold. Stay the course. That's not going to do it. That's all BS. You know, I think we all knew it was BS on some level of consciousness for a long, long time. But now we can't kid ourselves. I mean, come on. We've got to start talking straight. And you can't invest effectively in stocks. You know, the sentence that got me started on this was, in the new world, investors had no basis from which to calculate risk. We need to provide investors a way to calculate risk. That's rational investing. We need to stop this nonsense about you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices get insanely dangerous. We need to tell people you must change your stock allocation. Must. Underlined in red. You must change your stock allocation when prices get insanely dangerous. It's not only to protect your own portfolio, you must do it to protect our economy from collapsing. This is a public policy issue. We cannot permit this. We cannot permit our economy to be raped by advocacy of this dangerous, reckless, passive investing model of understanding how stock investing works. It's intolerable. It's intolerable. You know, there comes a time when as a community, we have to act in our own self-defense. And that's what David Brooks is saying, reading between the lines. He doesn't use those words. But read this column and read the earlier column, and I think you'll agree that, you know, that's where David Brooks is coming from. He's questioning the efficient market theory. In the new world, investors had no basis from which to calculate risk. Families slowly deleveraged. Bankers had no way to measure the future value of assets. See, everyone's wants to hang the bankers now. Hang the bankers from a tree. That'll solve it. It won't solve it. What will solve it is not hanging them from a tree. What will solve it is change how we think about investing and, you know, how we think about economics in general, so that the bankers can develop some tools so that they can do their job. They can't do the job with these crazy knuckle-headed schemes. These things don't work. How many websites do you know that have a stock return predictor? You know, I have one. John Russell has one, the same one. Jeremy Grantham, I think, has something along those lines. He doesn't have a calculator, but he certainly, if you read his articles, you'll get, you know, he will talk about predictions. John Hussman, I think, has something along those lines. You know, they're a small number. How the heck can you invest in stocks if you had no idea what kind of return you're going to get? You know, it's crazy. So I'm trying to provide tools for the middle-class investor. That's what I'm trying to do, so that they can invest rationally. Well, what David Brooks is pointing out is that somebody needs to do the same thing for bankers. You know, I can't develop the tools that bankers need to measure the future value of assets. Someone else is going to have to do that. But they clearly need tools, and they need tools that work. And if the tools are based on this rational man theory, they're not going to work. And the bankers have been using tools that don't make any sense. So it's not the bankers you have to hang from a tree. It's the rational man theory. You know, hang the rational man from a tree. That's what we need to do. Stop attacking the people who were taken in by the bad ideas and attack the bad ideas that caused this mess. Back to David Brooks. Cognitive scientists distinguish between normal risk assessment decisions, which activate the reward prediction regions of the brain, and decisions made amid extreme uncertainty, which generate activity in the, I can't even read this word, amygdala. These are different mental processes using different strategies and producing different results. Americans were suddenly forced to cope with the second category, extreme uncertainty. Economists and policymakers had no way to peer into this darkness. Their methods were largely based on the assumption that people are rational, predictable, and pretty much the same. Their models work best in times of equilibrium, Well, that's fair. The passive investing model works perfectly when prices are at fair value. When prices are at 14, 15, passive investing's a winner. So that's true. The model works at times of equilibrium. But in this moment of disequilibrium, behavior was nonlinear, unpredictable, emergent, and stubbornly resistant to Keynesian rationalism. Now, my comments, contrasting my comments with Brooks's comments leads to a paradox here. I was saying we're at a time of equilibrium today in the sense that the P10 value is fair value. But Brooks is saying we're at disequilibrium because behavior today is nonlinear and unpredictable and stubbornly resistant to Keynesian rationalism. Well, I think Brooks is correct. What we have today, and I discussed this in an earlier podcast, I don't recall the exact title. The title was something along the lines of, it's not the economic turmoil that caused the stock crash. It was the stock crash that caused the economic turmoil. Something like that. But the point here is, we are at fair value in terms of valuations today. The stock market is fairly valued. But that's not because everyone is at a psychologically healthy state. What we have today is half of investors are still hanging on to passive investing, hanging on by their knuckles, They won't give it up. The passive investing dogmatists, they're just saying, I'm going to hang on. Stocks for the long run. It's going to work somehow. I need more pixie dust. Anybody got pixie dust? I need more pixie dust. And the other half is freaking out. The other half is, the other half is Taylor Larimore, co-author of The Bogleheads Guide to Investing, turning to Plan B. Taylor has been advocating passive investing for 10 years. Now he says Plan B, sell all your stocks, go to zero. That's what the other half's doing. So we've got half, saying 100% stocks and half saying zero. And the overall, P10 level is fair value. But it's not because everyone is being rational. It's that, half is being irrational in one direction and the other half is being irrational in the other direction. What we need to do is to meld these people, you see? That's the answer. If you meld the two emotional extremes, you would have a healthy, emotionally balanced understanding of how stock investing works. But what happens is when people freak out, they get out of stocks, and then they're no longer in the discussions. They drop off all the boards, and you don't hear from them anymore. What we need is for those people to hang around to say, I'm not getting out of stocks, but I sure do want to understand how stock investing works. And then we could work it out. We could stop all these silly wars between bears and bulls. There's no such thing as bears and bulls in Rob Bennett's understanding of investing. There's people who want to achieve good returns at reasonable risk. We're all in the same boat. And the bears know things the bulls don't know, and the bulls know things the bears don't know. And when we stop fighting with each other and we start sharing information, we'll all be a lot better off. If passive investing drives this economy off a cliff, the rationals get hurt just as much as the passives in a depression. So we all should be working together. Back to David Brooks. It doesn't look like I'm going to get time for many of the comments, but I'm going to, let me start by reading the column, and then we'll see where we go from there. The failure to generate a recovery led to a collapse of public confidence. President Obama's promises of 3.5 million jobs now seemed a sham, and his former certainty a delusion. The political climate grew more polarized. That meant it was impossible to tackle entitlement debt. Far from easing uncertainty, the exploding deficits led to more fear. See, I think that's a real problem. The idea with the stimulus package is pump it up, and people won't be scared anymore. But I don't think it works. I think people see through it. People know that we're just pumping it up. People know, on some level of consciousness, people know the money has to come from somewhere. So, you know, if you're just incurring debt to pump it up, well, how's that going to solve the problem? It just means we're deeper in debt than we were before. So yes, you know, you might get a temporary little increase in the economy. That you might well get. But if you don't address the core problem, if you don't restore confidence on a deep level, it's all going to fade. And when it fades, when the economy fails again, then you think you see panic now? Wait until it fails. Wait until the stimulus fails. You would have been better not to have done anything. Doing nothing. A lot of people say, we have to do this because we can't do nothing. You know, doing nothing is not an option. Well, I disagree. Certainly, we can't sit around and we can't ignore the problem. We've been ignoring the problem ever since 1995. The best thing, the ideal thing, would have been if responsible people had spoken out when prices first went to insane levels. So we've been ignoring the problem for 13 years, 14 years. So I agree, doing nothing is not the answer. But doing the wrong thing is not the answer, because that gets false hopes up. And then when false hopes fail, disillusionment is even worse than it is today. And that's not good. I think the proper way to proceed would be to say, look, this is a new administration. We need some time to figure out what the real problems are, you know? You know, maybe adopt, I could see adopting a small bill that provided relief to the people who are under the most pressure, you know, address the true crisis items, but a bill that's a fraction of the size of the bill that's going through Congress today. And, you know, then take a year and find, you know, make a diagnosis. What caused this problem? And then deal with that problem, deal with the cause of the problem, and people would have more confidence in it. And I definitely believe that a bipartisan solution would be a better answer. Because what you hear in the comments to the David Brooks piece is a lot of people, you know, are missing the point, and they're saying, oh, Brooks, you know, Brooks favors Republicans, he's faulting Obama. And I don't think that's true. Not the way I read that column. I read the words where he faulted Republicans. He's basically faulting partisanship. And there's nothing partisan about behavioral finance. There's nothing partisan about the idea of abandoning the rational man approach to economics. There's nothing partisan about that. That both Republicans and Democrats have followed that model for many, many years. So that's not partisan. But if we adopt solutions that don't work, you know, the analogy I often give is I talk about, you know, a man who's cheated on his wife and he has to win back her trust. And trust has been shattered. And you know, say that he's scared. You know, he's scared that the marriage is going to fail. And, you know, he becomes desperate. He says, oh, I'm going to win her trust back and I'm going to do it this week. You know, and in his desperation, he spends lots of money. You know, he buys her a ring. And that doesn't send the right message. First of all, it doesn't send the right message because it's insulting. You know, the woman is not upset with the man because he doesn't spend enough money on her. He's upset because, you know, he violated his marriage vows. It's a very different thing. You know, in a different circumstance, you know, if they hadn't gone on a vacation in 5 years and he goes and gets tickets, you know, to Hawaii, that might be great. If that were the problem with the marriage, that might be a great solution. So there are cases where a stimulus might work. But in a case where you violated trust in a profound, deep way, you don't solve it by spending money. You know, abandoning passive investing doesn't cost us any money. It costs us some courage. People, our leaders need to develop the courage to stand up to this stock selling industry that's been pushing this gibberish on us ruthlessly, you know, for 30 years now, whether intentional or not. I think it's generally not intentional, but I don't think the word ruthless is improper, because this stuff has been shoved down our throats. You can't get a word in edgewise. There are millions of middle-class investors who have known for a long time this is gibberish. I haven't spoken to millions, but I've spoken to hundreds. I know this to be true. I've spoken to these people. And they feel intimidated. They're afraid to speak out. Because this machine, this stock-selling machine, just shoves this gibberish down our throats. This reckless, dangerous, irresponsible gibberish that we don't need to worry about prices when setting our stock allocation. I understand. You know, I've said this on other podcasts. I understand that these people bought into this theory for the most part, I presume. But it doesn't justify the bullying, the intimidation tactics that have been used. That's an historical fact. The intimidation tactics are an historical fact. It can be documented. And it's widespread. It's widespread. It, you know, includes large corporate organizations, big name experts engage in this stuff. So we need public leaders who will take these people on, not for the purpose of hurting their feelings, their precious feelings, for the purpose of opening up the possibility of some straight talk. But that's going to take some courage. So it doesn't cost money. And of course, that's true. In the case, you know, the analogy I use is the man who's cheated on his wife. What he doesn't need to spend $5,000 on a ring, you know, any more than we need to spend whatever it is we're spending on the stimulus package. He needs to work up some courage, which means, you know, he needs to look deep within. He needs to give a serious explanation of what happened. All he does when he makes light of what happened, you know, he says, oh, it didn't mean anything. That's cheap talk. That's not going to heal the wounds. And Congress, it's not fair to really blame this on Obama. He's, you know, it's Congress and it's Obama and it's the whole thing, you know. You know, he's just one person. But, you know, this is the cheap way. Spend money. You know, money for the districts, you know, money for the districts. Standard legislative procedure. You know, that's the cheap, easy way of solving the problem. Buy her a night out on the town. Buy her flowers. Buy her a ring. Go all out. What going all out means in this situation is, you know, sitting down. First of all, sitting down with yourself and owning up to your failings. Owning up to your failings. If you cheated on your wife, you failed her. Be a man. And then, you know, saying that to her, saying that to her face. And if it's BS, she's going to see through it because she knows you. If it's true, even if it's not perfect, you know, none of us have the ability to look within and get it right the first time. But she knows you, and if she cares about you, and she married you, so I think the odds are strong that she does. She wants the marriage to work. If you dig within and you say something real, that it's not going to win her over in a week, you see? And we're not going to solve this economic... We're not, you know, we've been following this rational man idea for decades. We're not going to solve it in a week or a month or a year. But if we talk straight with people, there'll be a change in tone. Instead of this dark cloud, which is the result of all these lies, people will start to feel optimistic again, a little bit, in the beginning. And that would be a positive sign. That's what we want to see. But that, see, we're not getting that. We're not getting that from a spending bill, which is just, you know, business as usual, Washington doing what Washington does, and the stock selling industry, you know, they bring out Bogle and they bring out Mel Kayle and they say, stocks for the long run, back up the truck, buy lots of stocks now. Good time to buy stocks cheap. Stocks cheap. Can't time the market. Oh, no, can't time the market. No, no, no. No, we didn't get anything wrong. No, no. When we told you to buy before, that was right, too. You should always buy. Always buy. Always buy. Yeah, always buy. That helps. That's good. That's good advice. It's working real well. Didn't mean a thing. Didn't mean a thing. That girl didn't mean a thing. That's going to solve it. We need serious people. Or we need people who used to be serious, digging down deep and gaining the courage to be serious once again. Back to David Brooks. Far from easing uncertainty, the exploding deficits led to more fear. The U.S. could not afford to respond to new emergencies like hurricanes or foreign crises. Other nations sensed American overextension. Foreign debt holders grew nervous. Interest rates rose. Congress indulged its worst instincts, erecting trade barriers, propping up doomed companies. Scholars began to talk about the American disease, akin to the British disease of the 1970s. The nation had essentially bet its future on economic models with primitive views of human behavior. Primitive. I have a podcast. Our understanding of how stock investing works is primitive. Ugh. We think we know it all, but we don't. And when people talk like they know it all, and when people become agitated when they're asked questions, that's a bad sign. That's a bad sign. I sent an email to John Bogle about valuation-informed indexing. I don't know how long ago it was. My rough guess is about 2 years ago, at least a year ago. Haven't heard from him. Bad sign. The nation had essentially bet its future on economic models with primitive views of human behavior. The government had tried to change social psychology using the equivalent of leeches and bleeding. I've used that exact analogy. Passive investing is using leeches. It's a primitive approach to medicine. It's a pre-scientific, it's like got this quasi-science, you know, it's got this science dressing. It looks like science if you don't examine it too close. But when you examine it close, it's the opposite of science. It's anti-science. It's anti-rational. It's all dogmatism, defensiveness, emotion, dreams, wishes, hopes. The opposite of science. But it looks like science. They dressed it up to make it look like science. The government had tried to change social psychology using the equivalent of leeches and bleeding. Rather than blame themselves, Americans directed their anger toward policymakers and experts who based estimates of human psychology on mathematical equations. David Brooks nailed it, people. He doesn't spell it all out because he didn't have time there to write a book. My guess is he's writing a book. He's on fire. These two columns I've read. I had wanted to go through the comments, and I'll have to decide. I don't know whether it's a better practice to do a... I may do a second podcast looking at the reader comments to the New York Times, or I may just go on. Because I've already done three podcasts on the David Brooks columns. But, you know, people don't want to hear this. This is not the easy way. What I'm recommending and what I believe David Brooks is recommending is it won't cost a lot of money. Being honest doesn't cost money, but it costs courage. And we're not there yet. And, you know, the fear that David Brooks is raising is that the only thing that will get us there is more pain. And there have been four times in history we went to insanely dangerous prices. This is the fourth time. The first three, we ended up at stock valuation levels 50% lower than where we are today. So that's the axe, you know, over our heads right now. If, you know, there's no determinism about this. There's no law of the universe that says we have to go down another 50%. It's 100% optional. But if our answer is to buy rings and flowers and candy to get the economy going again, my personal belief is the axe is going to come down. There's going to be another 50% price drop. This gibberish, this rational man gibberish, is not going to restore confidence. It's not going to do the job. People aren't buying it. And, you know, people will give it a chance, probably. But it may take 2 years, 3 years. But when people give up on it, when it fails, they won't give up a little bit. There'll be a big psychological hit. That'll be divorce. You know, and the guy then who had a chance to save his marriage, you know, he cheated on his wife, and he had a chance to save his marriage, and instead of doing that, you know, he bought her rings, and she said, you know, thanks, honey, but in her heart was still cold because she had been hurt, and he hadn't addressed the real problem. And 2 years later, you know, she's trying to make it work, and 2 years later, it's dead, and the papers get filed, and then the man cries. We have to cry at the right time, and we've heard enough people with this passive investing, rational man, efficient market theory gibberish. It's time to cry. It's time to break down. Break down, John Bogle. It's time to break down. That's my belief. I'm just one person. I'm not God. I hope you'll think about what I'm saying, but, you know, I'm not God. I'm telling you what I sincerely believe, and that's all. Nothing better, nothing worse. David Brooks isn't God, but I'm glad that he's putting this idea out into the public realm. And I hope he'll do some good. And I hope we'll all think it over. And I don't at all mean to think we can't recover from the stimulus. I don't think the stimulus is the right approach. But, you know, we've survived worse. But if it serves to take our eyes off the real problem, then it'll really hurt us. But if we follow up, you know, if we just say, okay, we did the standard thing, now we're going to go deeper, well, then I think it's a different situation. And that has nothing to do with Republicans or Democrats. It has to do with, are we responsible, adult human beings? Do we care? Do we care about our economic future? Because if we care, we will take steps to stop hurting ourselves and stop hurting our fellow community members. I love to hear feedback. Use the Contact Rob button on the left side of every page of the website. Good luck with your investing strategies.